This is the Saxo Market Call, the daily financial markets podcast, across asset classes and around the world.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It's Wednesday, 24th of May, 2023. We have a lot to get through today, and we'll be doing our first deep dive podcast, what we formerly called the helicopter edition, but we're going to change this maybe week to week. Who knows? We're going to try to have some fun with it, though, and we'll be looking at commodities and how to get exposure to commodities, both in the commodities themselves, but also in equities later with Ole Henson and Peter Garnry. Just a reminder, we have our biweekly survey out for your feedback on the Saxo Market Call and what you'd like to hear from us for the Friday listener edition. So do tune into that. You can find the link in the podcast description and on slide two in today's slide deck. We've got lots of answers rolling in. Going to be fun to process those and present those to you on Friday. Also a poll on a couple of what you're anticipating in markets. Okay, now on to today and what's going on in markets. I think a very distinct sense that maybe sentiment is changing here. Certainly in the equity market, a very ugly day yesterday with one really key sector, luxury, dumping very badly, Peter. And we've talked a little bit about this in our internal call. It seems like there's a bit of a different feel going on here. Nominally, you can look at the debt ceiling headlines. There's no progress there. This is probably going to get punted to next Tuesday before they even start talking again. Don't want to spend time on that. But it just strikes me as rather risk off this market here.
Very much, and we back in the range in the S&P 500. As you can see there, it was a 1.1% drop. As you mentioned, with the debt ceiling, that's just ongoing. But there's also a sentiment change, I think, on Wall Street. I think there's a chorus now that is growing bigger and bigger of equity strategists, macro economists, basically saying very dark clouds are forming over the U.S. economy and the markets. You had Kalanovich from J.P. Morgan Chase saying yesterday, you know, sell U.S. equities, go into gold and cash. I mean, that's a pretty defensive strategy to put out there. So I feel the change. There is more noise around these 0 day to expiry options than ever. We had one of the product guys behind that product innovation from the CBOE. He was on he was on TV yesterday talking and going through some of the numbers, and it's an incredible increase in magnitude of performance. And we have you just moved John to the next slide here, slide four. We have a 1 day VIX products as well. It's just this market is just growing and growing. I don't know whether complexity is the right word, but it's just the ecosystem of all these volatility products and options. It's just mind-boggling, to say the least. And I'm not sure whether it will end in a disaster.
I don't know what's going to happen here. I just get the sense that there's something lurking in this space. The degree to which this is discussed by traders, and also some new research we're seeing. It's just amazing, some of these proper options gurus, I mean, some of the best top names, you have total disagreement on how much the exposure is institutional versus retail. One of the ones we saw this morning suggested there's a bigger retail component. I think with that 1 day VIX chart there, that very long period of very suppressed levels, people probably taking on more risk in terms of the short volatility to get more of this yield enhancement. I just think there's something afoot in this space, even if it is just a 1 day volatility event that is triggered, and the irony that some of this is volatility suppressing in the short term, but potentially volatility enhancing once it gets beyond some certain break point. I don't know. I just think people need to be aware of this and be wary of anything that seemed to be a proper yield enhancement strategy that's been working for so long. Those things are the classic model of picking up dimes in front of a steamroller.
But what is it odd, John, is why would you have all the yield-enhancing strategies when we finally got high bond yields? And I know Taylor will talk more about the rising bond yields. But why
5% is not enough, Peter.
Yeah, and you talked about, you know, there's apparently a flow of people selling these yield enhancement strategies to people in Marbella. And as I said to you on the internal call, oh no, is this the new Düsseldorf moment? And the Düsseldorf meaning that was where you went if you wanted to sell toxic U.S. mortgages back in the days to the so-called stupid German pension funds. And that obviously ended in a disaster. It's just these stories, I just don't like it, to be honest.
No, I don't either. We're all concerned, which probably means equities will rally. But it just looks ugly all of a sudden. And the luxury stocks thing was one of those big sector moments, I think, that could be some kind of flag as well. I'll tell you, I was very poor in my introduction and not announcing that you are back on the podcast. So welcome back, Otsea.
Thank you, John.
On fixed income. And it's a great time for you to come on the podcast because this morning we just got this UK CPI data out showing massive a rise in the core to 6.8%, a new high for the cycle. We're supposed to be seeing inflation ebbing. The Bank of England with an incredibly aggressive forecast on inflation falling to 1%. Two-year swaps, I saw the UK two-year swaps up something like 30 basis points this morning. Take us through what you're seeing in the UK yield curve and what you anticipate here.
Well, John, as you can see in slide six, I put two charts. The one on the left-hand side shows the two-year UK swap spread. And that chart is telling us that the market was expecting the Bank of England to be more aggressive for quite some time. But the Bank of England obviously has failed to do that. Today, the bond market has woken up after the CPI results, and finally, gilt yields started to soar again across the yield curve. I am focusing mostly in the front part of the yield curve, and always in slide six, you will find that the two-year gilt yields chart. And as you can see today, two-year yields have broken above 4.2%, and they are rising towards 4.67%. For me, that level, 4.67%, is a critical level because last September we have seen that as yields approach this level, pension funds started to run into troubles. They had to scrap for collateral because they had a huge amount of derivative positions. And the Bank of England had to step in and rescue them by buying long-term gilts. So basically what I'm saying is that if we see gilt yields, two years gilt yields rising to hit 4.67%, then the Bank of England should be alarmed. And above this level, yields will find resistance at 5.57%. Which is a resistance we only have seen in 2008.
Yeah, it's incredible. We're back to levels that we're seeing during the complete panic, really, in both the sterling, which was trading down below 105 at one point, versus the U.S. dollar from that Quartang Trust mini budget, et cetera. And I think interesting also to see, and I'll talk about FX very shortly in a moment, that sterling tried to rally because, hey, hawkish for the Bank of England. But I think the key here is that this is a sign that inflation is a structural issue in the UK. The supply side on labor is an issue, as Brexit is the gift that just keeps on giving. And the risk here is actually quite negative for the UK economy, because a tighter Bank of England is going to mean ugly things for the economic outlook. And then you have some thoughts as well, I'd say, on the debt ceiling, some lessons to learn from 2011. And so what's your take there on slide seven?
Yes, John. So obviously, there is a lot of rumor surrounding the debt ceiling, but I find it interesting to compare to the situation of 2011, when basically the solution regarding the debt ceiling has been brought to the market 2 days before the X date. What can we learn from there? In slide seven, I put on a chart, and as you can see, long-term U.S. Treasury have been gaining before and after the X date. But what this chart is really telling us is that obviously long-term U.S. Treasuries gain because the volatility is concentrated on the shorter part, on the money market part of the yield curve. But they have started to gain the most after the X date because and the chart goes from the 1st of July 2011 until the 30th of August 2011. So basically, from the beginning of July until the X date, the 10-year U.S. Treasury yields dropped by 100 basis points, but the majority of that drop was following the X date. After the X date, they dropped 70 basis points. So the big point here, John, is that it is fine to go into long-term U.S. treasuries, but we might not benefit from that rally that we have seen in 2011 unless there is something happening after the X date, which in 2011 was a downgrade from Standard & Poor's at the time of the U.S. of the U.S. debt rating.
Yeah, and this time it could be anticipation of a darkening economic outlook that could support longer-term treasuries. That will be a critical question. And then there's the idea that all the issuance is going to be there once they do agree on a debt ceiling deal, once the Treasury has to rebuild its reserves. And on that note, the two-year Treasury auction, as you point out on slide 8, very strong. Yields sort of rose a bit further yesterday and came back in, but one of the best auctions, you're saying, in a long time.
Absolutely. We have seen indirect bidders at 68.2%, which was the highest since 2009 and the second highest on record. That helped the 2 years yields to correct slightly after the auction yesterday, because U.S. Treasury yields were on the rise. But as we can see on the chart on slide 8, we see the 2 years U.S. Treasury yields have broken above the resistance, and they are still rising towards that 4.49%. The big point here is that we might see, you know, like even more inversion of the yield curve. And as you said before, if there is more risk surrounding the debt ceiling, then the 10 years could definitely drop in yield, and the inversion can become even worse before the yield curve is going to steepen.
Yeah. Peter?
Yeah, it was just highlighting a remark that came yesterday from Jamie Dimon, the CEO of JP Morgan. He said the market should contemplate and prepare for what did he say? Was it 6%? 6% yield.
6 to 7%. I think
6 to 7% yield. I thought that sounded extremely aggressive. I don't know where he got the 7% from. I can understand maybe 6, but again, yeah, it's a very dynamic and fluid situation. I just wanted to put it out there because this is one of the influential banking CEOs.
Yeah, and then on FX, so we see sterling. Like I said, it tried to rally and then it came back down. I think quite interesting there. Where it stands at the end of today is really a critical signal on whether this inflation print is being read as the UK has a real rates problem. And I think that could be the risk here. Real rates problem, meaning that they're never going to be able to get their policy rate high enough to compensate for these inflationary risks in the economy. A stagflationary outlook is not good for the currency. And they'll have to be, of course, curbing on the fiscal side to improve the inflation outlook as well. Tight fiscal is not good for a currency either. So a big test for sterling here today. The other key thing here, we have a firm dollar. Go back to slide 5 and look at the latest developments on the FX trends, is certainly in the Kiwi. With the RBNZ, one of the first to begin sort of abandoning the pandemic emergency style response to the economy and hiking rates, has now suddenly declared an end to its tightening cycle after the 25 basis point expected hike overnight. This was a surprise because the forward expectations had a bit more tightening priced in. And as recently as the prior meeting, it seemed like they were just on schedule to continue tightening. So this sudden declaration of the end just really absolutely knocked Kiwi down, which ironically had just been rallying because of a RBNZ inflation expectation survey. You can see the Kiwi versus the US dollar chart there, already back to its 200-day moving average, a very ugly sell-off. Aussie Kiwi has posted a key reversal around the 106 area, so just wanted to point that out in FX. But let's roll forward and back to the equity market, and before we get to our deep dive on commodities, luxury stocks, Peter, I know it's not your first one there on slide 9, but this has been a sector that's so much in focus. We created this luxury stock basket so you can track sort of the industry. What's your take on, I think it was a brief mention you had as well in the internal call, and what might have been the proximate trigger of this big slide? And it's a big slide if you look at the market leader, LVMH.
Yeah, it was a big drop, 5%. That's basically raising almost 2 months of gains in LVMH, and this is the biggest luxury company. Our baskets are equal weighted, so the equal weighted return yesterday was minus 2.7%. Obviously, if you take a market cap weighted index approach to it, it would have been more, and that's also what you have seen reflected in the Stoxx 600 Luxury Index, which is the benchmark index here in Europe for that part of the market. And the approximate cause or trigger was apparently a comment and some slides presented at a luxury conference in Paris yesterday, organized by Morgan Stanley, suggesting that we're seeing a worse than expected sales development in the U.S. That was enough to trigger, and I think it adds to this, you know, this weakness we have seen in generally in the U.S. retail space, and it's part of that evidence that a lot of the macroeconomists around in the U.S. are, you know, pulling forward as evidence that, you know, the U.S. economy is slowing down. But I just want to point out here, the market is always right in the sense, so of course it should be reacting to this negative data points. But keep in mind as well that the rally in luxury stocks to begin with this year was not predicated on a strength in the U.S. economy at all. It was a proxy bet on the Chinese reopening, and then the U.S. economy remaining more robust than anticipated just 3-4 months ago. So, just to clarify, and when you look at as well on the long term, this is a 5-year weekly chart on slide 9. You can see as well, there's a drop here, but at this point in time, we cannot say that this is developing into a catastrophe. But speaking as right now, I just checked some of the luxury stocks before we went into the studio, John, and some of those luxury stocks are down again today. So let's track this. I think it's a good indicator of whether a lot of investors are repositioning after initial positions to start the year. And then Palo Alto, we flagged it. It's part of the cybersecurity industry. They showed better results, both on especially on the billings and the earnings side of things, and they lifted the lower end fiscal year revenue guidance a little bit. It was not much, but apparently the market is just really in love with cybersecurity stocks, so they were taking this as a good indication of what to expect for the future. The shares were up 5% in extended trading, and then today on slide 10, the earnings to watch today. NVIDIA and Snowflake, two technology giants, obviously the most focused on NVIDIA, been rallying insanely this year because of the AI hype. As I said the other day, these are the shovels that are being used for this gold rush in AI. And you can see here on the little insert I have put in here on slide 10, you can see that there is a 21% expected revenue decline for the quarter that ended in April. And then very fast forward here, by the quarter that ends in July, revenue growth is back to 7%, and then it jumps to 35% and 42% by the end of this year. Again, just interesting that you're seeing these increased bets and talks about the U.S. economy is potentially slipping into a recession. But then on the other hand, that's not going to mean anything for AI. NVIDIA is just going to rise into the sunset. So I think increasingly a lot of these data points are not aligned very well, and we'll just have to see what NVIDIA. I think the expectations for the NVIDIA's earnings result are pretty high here. So I'm very curious to see whether they can maintain that. And then Snowflake is a cloud infrastructure and data analytics company, and I think it's a pretty good. It will be a very good temperature on what is the IT spending in that part of the market. Recently, we saw a downgrade from Alibaba, their cloud business. We're seeing some weakness, and they actually laid off a lot of people. So maybe that's a sign that weakness is coming in for maybe Snowflake as well.
Yeah, interesting. The NVIDIA one there. Okay, macro calendar. I won't spend any time on this. We have the FOMC meeting minutes tonight. I can't think of. We'll probably see a bit of debate on that. There seem to be a bit on two camps on whether the further tightening credibility is needed or we're at a significant pause. I just don't think the market is terribly reactive to FOMC minutes, more reactive to incoming data. I do think it's a very interesting time frame and an awkward one for Bailey to be talking about, quote, inflation in the economy at a Wall Street Journal event. So do note that one. Again, a big test today for sterling. We got the preliminary Eurozone PMIs yesterday, and just the manufacturing side of that is just absolutely hideous. If I recollect correctly, 42.9 for the German manufacturing. So things are getting worse at an accelerating pace, according to that survey. New low for the cycle. We have the IFO up this morning. Basically, it's already out as we're talking here. And PC inflation on Friday will be one of the next focus points. But I think the market is just grappling with a bigger agenda here. Okay, we were originally planning on putting the deep dive part of this podcast within the normal flow. We have at this point, I'm coming back in here. We had actually recorded a very long deep dive on a commodity exposure and how to achieve it in the market, especially via equities. But in the interest of time, we wanted to get out the daily podcast first, and we'll just put that other one out as a special edition. So stay tuned for that. Later today, we'll have a special edition deep dive podcast on the commodity market and gaining exposure via equities. So great thoughts from mostly from Ole Hansen, our head of commodity strategy, and Peter Garnery on the equity side. So stay tuned for that. And for now, that's a wrap for today. We'll be back tomorrow with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.